I'm Claire.
And I'm Emma.
Welcome to Rich Text, a podcast about our cultural obsessions, like personal essays that make us want to bang our head against our own desks, and the inevitable discourse that follows.
If you're listening today, you're already a paid subscriber to our audio and written newsletter, Rich Text. Thank you, as always, for being here. You quite literally make our work possible.
We're here today because, like everyone else on our side of the internet, at least, we read The Case for Marrying an Older Man, The Cut's latest viral hit, which has kicked off a week of rage and conversation. And I think it's sort of inevitable that we were going to get here somehow, because age gap discourse has been like really brewing for a while. And The Cut has even had a previous viral piece about it recently. I think it's time for us to just like have our age gap discourse episode.
Yeah, we will revisit it, I think, in a different form when we get into our review of The Idea of You, the forthcoming Anne Hathaway movie, which approaches the age gap from a very different perspective.
Yes, yes, it does. And I think there's going to be a lot to say about that. We saw the movie, we enjoyed it. I thought there were a lot of questions about the age gap that are worth digging into. But for now, we're going to focus on some of the online discourse we've been having. We're really going to focus on this essay and the case it lays out. The essay, The Case for Marrying an Older Man, was written by a writer. We think her name is pronounced Grazie Sophia Christie or Grazie Sophia Christie. And it was published by The Cut on March 27th as part of their The Good Life package, a series about ways to take life off hard mode, from changing careers to gaming the stock market, moving back home, or simply marrying wisely.
Simply do it.
Just marry wisely. In her essay, Christie makes the case basically that women should optimize their lives towards marrying young, when their beauty is at its peak, their eggs are plentiful, their ponytails are flush.
Flush with hairs before they wither and crumble at age 30, as we all
yeah,
know.
Yeah, my ponytail That's is when the so ponytail wispy dies. Now. Yeah, and they should marry older, and let's be honest, although she is not, richer men.
Mostly richer.
I mean, this assumption that men who are 30 are going to set you up for life.
Truly,
I mean,
hilarious.
I've met a lot of 30-year-old men, and very few of them are capable of doing much for you, in the sense of like allowing you to not do any work anymore, because you can just stay at home and drink the good wine that they supply. That's not what most 30-year-old men are up to.
Let me tell you, I dated in New York for many years, and that wasn't the vibe I got from most 30-year-old men. And it didn't matter if I was their age or if I was like 6 years younger than
them. She's like, the problem is that you're dating young men. And I'm like, do you realize how many 30-year-old men all of us met who still sleep on a mattress on the floor?
Oh, yes. I met men into their 30s who had a mattress on the floor and almost no employment or ambition.
Yeah.
So
they eat everything off of paper plates. Like, do you think that by dating men who are a decade older, we can just escape this brand of man? These men persist. They don't grow up. They don't just suddenly get handed a ton of money when they turn 30. Like,
let me tell you,
that's not how life works for most people.
I have friends dating 45-year-old men who don't have their shit together.
Yeah. No, same. That's the exception rather than the rule, especially in this economy, as we say.
Yeah, please.
You can't count on that. But so basically she's like, find an older rich man who is sort of like not only rich, but already has started his career, which has been undergirded by an expensive education and a lot of family connections. It's even better to meet that man when he's 30 and he's well on his way, rather than meet that man who's set for life when he's 22. You know, he's further along the path of his extremely wealthy adult existence.
Exactly. And I think that the opening paragraphs of this essay really set the tone. Like, this is the, as soon as I started reading this essay, I was like, oh no, this is going to evoke a deep sense of rage within me.
Yeah.
And I knew from basically one sentence in. So this is the opener. In the summer, in the south of France, my husband and I like to play, rather badly, the lottery. We take long, scorching walks to the village. Gratuitous beauty, gratuitous heat. kicking up dust and languid debates over how we'd spend such an influx. I purchased scratch-offs, jackpot tickets, scraping the former with euro coins in restaurants too fine for that. I never cash them in, nor do I check the winning numbers. For I already won something like the lotto, with its gifts and its curses, when he married me. He is 10 years older than I am. I chose him on purpose, not by chance. As far as life decisions go, on balance, I recommend it.
This is such a fascinating intro. For one thing, I barely made it past this. I was like, I can't read this. And then
you were like, I must.
And then
persevere.
I was like, I must, because I want to be part of the discourse. And that's how they get you. For another, it reads the first time you read it through, like, really, like, good writing. Like, it has some of the signifiers, you know, languid, cascading clauses with all the commas. And it gives the impression that she's being very precise and, like, saying something very specific and interesting. And then you read it again and you're like, wait, okay. So they play the lottery and then they're getting these scratch-offs and they're like, what would we do with all this money? And then they just don't check the numbers? What are they doing? Do they just like scratching things? Like, what is the point of this?
We are so rich that we like to pay to scratch things.
It's like if Greg and I like went to hang out and get a drink and scratch off a lottery ticket and be like, oh my God, what would we do if we had enough money to go out for iced coffee and a croissant this weekend? Wouldn't that be crazy? How would we spend it? And it's like, well, we already have that much money. So why are we talking about it like it's this fantasy? She's trying to kind of have it both ways. Like, we like to have a fantasy about what we would do if we would have that much money. But also, we do have that much money. So all we're doing is just scratching lottery tickets
for no
reason.
In the south of France.
So weird.
Like the establishment of wealth is in those first eight words. In the summer in the south of France. Okay. I understand.
Yeah.
You've situated yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's by saying that we like to do this in the summer in the south of France, and it's something you could do any time of year, definitely conveys that this is where they go for just for the summers.
Also, as writers, I think that we are specifically attuned to writing that has these markers of being high-minded and literary, but then when you actually dig into the meaning of what is being written, you realize that it's quite empty and like florid for no reason.
Yeah. At least for me, and I wonder if this is the case for other writers, it's one of those things where, like, you see your own anxieties as a writer reflected back at you. You're like, oh my God, is this what I've been doing? Like, I feel like I've written sentences like this. Is this how I look to everyone? Was it all just empty style? Empty bad style?
I think that there are a few things that Christie does in this essay, paired with the fact that it has been so widely read and is published by New York Magazine, that like tick some particular rage evoking boxes for us personally.
Yeah. No, it's like I feel attacked.
Yeah.
And then she gets into explaining her conscious decision to like hunt for a husband during her college years. She writes, I could diligently craft an ideal existence over years and years of sleepless nights in industry, or I could just marry it early. I had high breasts, most of my eggs, plausible deniability when it came to purity, a flush ponytail, a pep in my step that had yet to run out. Apologies to progress with a capital P, but older men still desired those things. Older men like those 30-year-olds, like those old-fashioned 30-year-olds.
I was truly assuming for about half the essay that this was a woman in her 40s or 50s looking back on being married young and several decades in.
Yeah.
I was like, she's been married for at least 20 years and she is trying to say, like, I did this thing and it was a hack and I have the proof. So it is truly a fucking jump scare when, like, 1,000 words in, you realize that Christie is not, in fact, looking back wistfully at her younger years after a decades-long marriage, but that she is currently 27 years old and her husband is a grizzled 37. They have been married for 4 years.
Yeah, I truly can't imagine. Like, this actually makes her seem extremely young to do a victory lap about this kind of thing at a relatively young age. Like she hasn't even gotten to the age where she realizes that it's too young. Like she's still at the age where she's like, I'm 25 and it's time for me to write a memoir, not realizing that it's too early to write a memoir. She won't realize that for at least another 5 years. And like, she still is so like unformed that she's like, I think it's a good idea for me to take a victory lap about this decision I made that will presumably structure the rest of my life. And there will be many opportunities to see, to test whether this was a good decision that haven't happened yet.
Exactly. And also, she possesses none of the insight, because she can't. It is not her fault. She's literally only 27. That being in your 30s is not a death sentence. That there is so much life ahead, you know, if you are lucky. The way that I can't tell you what the lived experience is of being in my 40s. So I am not going to kind of lecture to people who are in their 40s and 50s about the life decisions I've made and why they are good.
Yeah. Well, she presumably isn't lecturing older women because it's too late for them.
It's true. I guess she is. I guess this is really an essay for women in their teens.
Yeah, she's like, hey, 18-year-olds, do you want to be happy when you're 27? I have a great idea for you. Marry a hot French 30-year-old count.
He is a count.
Count who comes from massive family wealth. And you'll be happy when you're 27. I'm like, yeah, duh. Like, that sounds great. I'm sure I would also be happy at 27 if I was married to a hot French count with lots of money. Unless he was like truly a monster, I'm sure I would be pretty happy with that. It's more about, is that really what it would mean for most young women to marry an older man? Is that really a formula that's going to continue making you happy throughout your lifetime? Is this a strategy that is going to uplift women as a group?
She
doesn't care.
She doesn't care, and the answer is no. But on the personal level, there's just a lot that's unanswered. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what started to really grate at me as I got further into the essay, now having the information that she is only 27.
Yeah.
She kind of extols the fact that her husband at 30 was fully formed, which again is hilarious. And she sees herself as the lucky recipient of his molding. She sees the idea of partnership as kind of a dirty term. Like, who would want a partner? She certainly doesn't. She writes, my husband isn't my partner. He's my mentor, my lover, and only in certain contexts, my friend. Only in certain contexts. I'll never forget it, how he showed me around our first place, like he was introducing me to myself. This is the wine you'll drink, where you'll keep your clothes. We vacation here. This is the other language we'll speak. You'll learn it. And I did. Adulthood seemed a series of exhausting obligations, but his logistics ran so smoothly that he simply tacked mine on. I moved into his flat, onto his level, drag and drop, cleaner thrice a week, bills automatic. By opting out of partnership in my 20s, I granted myself a kind of compartmentalized, liberating selfishness none of my friends have managed.
I mean, what she's describing is just being a child. Like, she has the role in his life that a child has in their parents' life. Everything
is, except they can drink wine.
Right. Well, you know, I don't want to judge your family setup, but yeah, she is his dependent in every sense of the word.
Quite literally.
Yeah. He pays for her life. He makes decisions for her life. He runs the household so that she never has to worry about how things will be clean or whether the bills are paid. She describes this as like liberating selfishness, but it really is just arrested development. Like, I guess it's true that being a child has a liberating selfishness.
Yes.
Do we then like say, well, the goal of adulthood is to try to find a way to never grow up? I don't even think that she would say that is the goal of adulthood. I don't know that she has quite made that connection.
No. Listened to a free preview of this week's Rich Text podcast. If you like what you heard and you want to listen to the rest of this week's podcast and our entire Rich Text back catalog, you can become a paying subscriber at clareandemma.substack.com.
If not, you can still enjoy our free weekly recommendations.
Rich Text is hosted, produced, and edited by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray.
You can find the written version of Rich Text at clareandemma.substack.com.
You can find us on Instagram at Claire and Emma Pod, and you can find our other podcast, Love to See It, over at Stitcher and wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as on TikTok and Twitter at Love to See It Pod.
You can also find us individually at Claire E. Fallon and at Emma Lady Rose.
Thanks for listening.